Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. I'm Dan Hurst, and today we begin a two-part series for church membership, talking about church membership.
Isn't that exciting? I can just tell already people have they're already got their hand on the button saying, let me find another podcast. Where's Trevin Wax today? Can we find something maybe Trevin's doing? Hey, listen, don't move it. Don't touch that dial. By the way, we have traffic and weather on the 8th, and Trevin doesn't have that. No, seriously, church membership matters. Listen, if you want to revitalize your church, all right, if you want to see God do something powerful in your church, he's going to do it through your members.
That's right.
And one of the reasons our churches are so dysfunctional is we have dysfunctional members because they don't understand membership and what it means. And so Tom Rainer wrote this excellent little book, I Am a Church Member. It's a little short book. Anybody can read it. We're going to go through that book, and then we'll explain to you why you need to have this book, perhaps, as one of your foundations for membership. But especially, even if you don't use the book, these points from the book will help direct you to where you need to go to help your church members become the kind of church members that can be part of a biblical church revitalization. I would say it all the time. You don't start with demographics. You don't start with going to a conference and trying to copy what somebody else does. It's not about trying to grow your church and breaking the 200 barrier. It's about letting God do what he wants to do in your church, and he will do it through your people. So we're here with Mark Halleck. Say
hey,
hello,
guys.
Mark.
Hey, guys.
Anybody
good
want
to
say hi to back at home, Mark, that might be listening?
Oh, man,
right now?
I'll tell you what. Just the beautiful city of
Denver.
That might
be listening. Is that what you said?
All my good friends in Colorado.
Oh, there you go.
That's right. That's right.
Mark drove over here from Denver, just drove in last night, drove all night to be with us. We're at the Spurgeon Library in Kansas City. Across the table from me is Dan Hurst to my right. Is Mark Halleck, and to my left, running the board when he's not playing video games, is is Kyle Bierman, and we are all here, and we're going to talk about what it means to be a godly church member.
Let's
number
talk,
one.
Let's start with number one, because number one is actually rather quite explosive. It's one of those things, because everybody's, oh, yeah, I'm a church member, or and we'll get to this at some point. Well, why do I have to be a church member?
Let's start there.
Okay.
Because often Rainer does that. Rainer will say, and you know, I spent 6 years doing a podcast every week with Tom Rainer. Mm. By the way, between Tom and I, we have written 41 books together. Well, not together, but between the two of us, we've written 41 books.
Wow.
That's impressive.
He's written 40. I've written one.
I was going to say. I was waiting for that one. I was waiting for that line.
Anyway, whatever. I tell him that all the time. But Tom says, you'd be surprised how I have to push back on people who say, well, membership doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
what matters
yeah.
is just involvement.
Well, it's their understanding of what church membership
is. Yeah, well, what do you mean membership? And what that comes from, it comes from a whole generation of young men and women who saw membership mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was a kid, one time I was looking at the monthly Baptist paper that came out in our state when I was in early 1970s, maybe late 1960s. And it had in the middle, it had the church attendance of all the churches in the state, but it also had their membership. And I remember at that time our church attendance was around 300, 350. But the membership was over 1,000. And I didn't know we had over 1,000 members. I remember asking my dad, who was the pastor, how come we got 1,000 members? Oh, yeah, we have 1,000. Where are they? Well, some are non-resident, and some are inactive, and some are – how can we have 1,000? It was like it was a natural thing. Yeah, you got 1,000 members, 300. So I think some of us grew up thinking membership doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
if you can have 1,000 members and only have 300 on Sunday, it means nothing. So I understand some people saying – you're putting too much emphasis on membership. What matters is involvement and commitment and that kind of thing. But, and we don't have time to get into it now, but there is a scriptural basis for membership.
That's right.
Not the least of which the book of Hebrews that says that you and I as pastors are going to give account for every soul in our care. How do we know who's in our care?
Yeah.
Also, they did come together. One of the things the church as a whole did, not just the elders or the pastors, they removed members, or removed church from their, removes what their some members. And that was something the church did. Well, how do you remove somebody if they're not part of something?
Yeah, that's
right.
That's right.
There's got to be something, or you're removing somebody from somebody that's not there.
And how do you practice the one another's?
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
I mean, so anyway, you're exactly right. It
so
is biblical.
We're going to, if you want to talk more about membership, we'll do that later. But membership is, I believe, biblical completely. And so with that understanding, now let's go to number one.
Okay, so the first one is this: I will be a unifying church member.
Wow.
Well, that really kind of messes things up, doesn't it? What do you mean unifying?
Well, that takes care of the 700 of the 1,000 that didn't show up, probably. Oh, man. There's a lot there. Unpack some of it, Howard.
Well, Jesus, I mean, listen, Jesus desires, expects unity in his body. He loves unity. We know from the New Testament that God despises disunity. This
there
is his
go.
Body. And so if you are not going to be a unifying church member, quite frankly, you're opposed to God and what he expects and desires of his church.
Well, let's take it the other side to describe what unifying means. What does a disunifying or ununifying or whatever the word would be. What would that look like?
Okay, so let's just contrast. So we could say a disunifying. Is that, I don't know if that's a word. I like the word. I like it.
Look it up.
Okay,
Kyle.
is someone who is
please
is not truly committed. Doesn't follow through on their commitments to the body. A unifying member is faithful and follows through. A disunifying, I'm going with it, is someone who tends to gossip. And slander and talk bad about their brothers and sisters. A unifying church member is an encourager.
Yeah.
It builds up others, right? A disunifying member is someone who loves to take cheap shots from the stands and isn't in the game using their gifts. A unifying member says, hey, listen, I want to use my gifts. God's given me gifts. I want to help this church move forward. So these are some of the things that we look at, but they're very, very different types of folks. In church revitalization, if you're someone who brings disunity, literally, you could be the death blow of the church. And if you're a unifier, you could be the hope giver that this congregation needs to actually begin to see new life and new fruit.
I think members who bring disunity, I think they're not people who think through what they're about to say.
Mm-hmm.
They may have an opinion on something, but they don't stop and think, listen, is my opinion, is it really that important? And if I share it, how's it going to affect the unity of the body? The unity of Christ's body is so important. I don't want to do something off the cuff that could damage that I haven't thought through and prayed through and talked about with some other people I trust. And sometimes we create this environment in Baptist churches of local church, you know, governance, which is great, but we sort of adopted this idea that we're a big public town hall and anybody can say anything that's on their mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge value, like that's a New Testament value or something, right?
Yeah.
So the most carnal, unprayed-up Christian can just pop off about anything, and we're supposed to listen because he's a member.
That's right.
Well, you're a disunifying member if you don't think carefully about what you say in a church meeting or to a church brother
or to
a church leader.
That's right.
You put that through that filter. Is this going to be unifying or disunifying? If it may be disunifying, I need to step back and make sure this is what I need to say and how I need to say
That's right.
I'm not telling you never confront leadership or never, you know, express opinion you believe God's given you. I'm not telling you to do that. I'm telling you, be careful how you do it, and don't do it just off the cuff, and don't do it out of your own personal preferences, right? And realize, here's the deal. I have to be intentional about being unifying because we're all like kindergartners. We all want what we want,
right? That's right.
We want everybody to look at us. We want everybody to do what we want. We know what kind of music we want. We know what kind of pews we want. We know what kind of preaching we want. We know what kind of building we want. We know all that. Well, that doesn't matter. What does Jesus want with his church?
Yeah.
And how can I be a unifying member? And
that's so good.
Man, wouldn't it be great if you look out on Sunday morning, everybody out there, one of their first goal was to love Jesus more and pursue holiness. Their second goal was to do whatever they could do to be a unifying member that all come together around
the foundation of that is humility. A disunifying member, every time, we've seen it over and over again, is a prideful person who wants their agenda and wants to, you know, do their thing.
But justifies what they
do. Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah.
You know, it's like we had a lady down at a church that I was in down in Florida who said, well, how are they going to know there's a problem if I don't tell them?
Oh, you know? What a gift. What a spiritual gift. I wish she was in my church. Wait, she is in my church. She must have a sister.
And it was like, are you hearing what you're saying?
Wow. I mean, yeah.
You know, that's that, and some of them, God bless them, they really do believe that they need to. Part of the building process is to tear down the broken walls.
Yeah.
And it's as a pastor, and especially as a revitalizing pastor, you're in a very tenuous position right there, because this person really believes that what they're doing is helpful.
And let's talk about one other thing. Sometimes being a disunifying member feeds something in me. Here's what I'm talking about. If you've been a pastor for very long, there are people that you deal with who have a need for drama in their life. And if there's not any drama in their life, they're going to create
it. They'll make it,
And exactly. They can create it in the church. They create it at work, they'll get fired. Mm-hmm. Maybe they create it at home, you know, their spouse will just give them what for. Yeah. But they can come to church and create some drama. And what happens is then they become the center of attention, and they crave that. And sometimes if you feed that, it makes it worse. So you got to be aware that some people, sometimes you're right, they feel like they want to, you know, they feel like they need to tell you the truth of what's going on. I love it when guys, people say this. You know, that's just who I am. I just speak my mind. Yeah. I want to say, no, that's who you were before Christ.
That's right. That's
the
exactly
fruit
right.
of the Spirit is not speaking your mind, all right? Yeah. You nail that to the cross. Your old self is dead. Amen. Don't tell me this is who I am. That's I can right. behave this way. That's not true.
That's right.
But nonetheless, some people say, you know, I need to make sure that things are going well. But some people are disunifying, not because they couch it like, I want the best for the church.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They don't even know why they do it. They just have this need for drama.
That's right.
And if somebody's going to say yes, they're going to say no, because then everybody's going to look at them and they're saying no.
Yeah, that's right. So just practically on this one, I think if you are a pastor or church leader, this is why it's so important to, in the positive, cast vision constantly for the beauty of being a unified church in your preaching. I think probably on a very regular basis, I want to paint a picture of why unity is so beautiful and why it's so important. And then in this church, Satan wants to divide with us and divide us. And guys, we're going to fight that, because we love Jesus, we love each other. And this city, the city of Denver, that is so lost, needs a church that is unified. So what my encouragement on a practical level is, lead in the positive, cast vision for unity. Here's what happens over time. If you are a disunifier, you won't find yourself at home in that congregation, because you quickly go, man, these people aren't going to play my game.
They're not going to give me the drama I need.
That's exactly right. That's so you have exactly to right. change the temperature of the room, and you do that through your leadership.
So what's the second one, Dan?
Well, the second one is, I will not let, oh man, I love that. I will not let the church be about my personal preferences or desires. That's a willful choice to say, look, I am not going to be the center of attention, just like what you've been talking about.
So
I am not going to let that happen. Yeah. This is not about me. You know, when somebody gets to that point, that is spiritual maturity.
To
be able to say, this is not about me.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Because everything is about us. Like I said, we're all kindergartners.
Yeah.
We want everything to be about us. And even the New Testament says, you know, think of others more important than yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't put your agenda first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in our churches, there's so many preferences and desires. You know, when Paul is writing to Timothy in 1 Timothy, he says to remain in Ephesus so you might teach sound doctrine. And he says, so because many are arguing over endless myths and genealogies that have no resolution.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know what the endless myths and genealogies were, but they were obviously, listen, this is important. Everything I say is important. But this is important. I got to quit saying, listen, this is important. Anyway, but listen, this is important. If it were a doctrinal issue that they were arguing over, Paul would have dealt with it at that moment. No question about it. Or he would have told Timothy, deal with this. It wasn't doctrine they were arguing over. It was things that didn't even matter they were arguing over. It was desires and preferences they were arguing over. Do we bring coffee in the sanctuary?
Right.
Do we have pews or do we have chairs? I mean, what kind of music are we going to sing?
Yeah.
I mean, those are desires and preferences. Those are myths and genealogies. Paul says, stop it. Yeah. There's no need for that. That's not what we're hearing about. And those are things you cannot rally around. You cannot unify around preferences and desires.
Yeah.
You unify around Christ and the gospel.
That's right. Amen. That's
Let me tell you, one time I was teaching away in my eloquent way that I do, and the class I teach is rather large, and I was getting on a soapbox about people's behavior, the etiquette, you know, church member etiquette type thing, And one of the things that it irks me to no end for people to wear hats in church. You know, I have, because I wasn't raised that way. Yeah. In fact, I was told that was disrespectful to be that way. And so for some reason, I knew in the back of my head that's where I was going, and I couldn't stop myself from going that way, you know. And it was like I really wanted. And I said, you know, if I had my druthers, and a guy in my class, an older man in my class, just yelled out, but you don't.
You don't have your druthers.
That put a stop to it right there.
That is so funny. That's
right. You don't have a right to your druthers.
Let's talk about it. We're going to do worship later on, but, you know, corporate worship. All right, turn up the volume. Here we go. This is really important.
This is
the dynamite drop here. Corporate worship is the opportunity for us, for we as members, to actually be led in something, not lead it. Mm. All right? That's why when you go into corporate worship, you set your preferences aside, and you are submitting yourself to your church leaders. I'm going to let you lead me in worship.
Oh,
man. In the scriptures we read, in the prayer we pray, in the songs we sing. It's not anything about my preferences. I'm going to submit. I can get in the car after this is over, and I can put in the Gaither Homecoming, and I can roll down the windows and listen to Vestal Gumden sing as loud as she can sing all the way home.
Yes.
That's my preference.
That's right. Yep.
I can go home and read any scripture I want to read. That's my preference. I can go home and pray about anything I want to pray about. That's my preference. That's why Don Whitney says corporate worship is really more important than individual worship, because it forces us to be led, not to lead. And in our own flesh, we always want to lead.
Yes.
So you can really... You can say, well, I'm not about my preferences. Really?
Yeah.
What about, are you willing to be led in corporate worship? Are you willing? Yeah. And so it's things like corporate worship. It's also all other kinds of things.
Yeah. No, I've got, you know, it makes me think of on this one, you know, there really is, it's more of an art than a science in terms of how do you help people face their personal preferences and desires and then lead them beyond those. Because that's a huge leadership challenge in church revitalization. For instance, sometimes... You know, I just think about there were two sweet older ladies when I came to Calvary, sat right by each other, right by the wall. They'd lost their husbands. They sat in the same place for years and years and years. And here's what we know about older people. They're losing everything.
Right.
They're losing everything. And so they don't have value in our culture as elderly folks. They've lost, in this case, their husbands, their health. The one thing that they haven't lost is their church.
Right.
And so one of the things I had to learn early on as a pastor was it wasn't so much with these two, and this is true with some folks, that they don't want change, you know, don't mess with my stuff, as much as they needed to be shepherded and loved to value what is it that you value, what's underneath the preference, enter into that with them, celebrate that with them, and then help them to see a future that's going to look a little different, but building off the past, not replacing it. Does that make sense? So I think there's a pastoral aspect to leading, because it wouldn't have been a win for me to just say, well, who cares about these two ladies? We're going to just do what we're going to do.
Right.
That's not a shepherd's heart. That's not honoring to the Lord. So it takes time, Pastor, to love those two ladies, to hear their stories, to let them cry and think and share some of the memories of why that's hard. Because here's a lot of times they know they're going to die.
Yeah.
They know that they can't carry this on.
Right.
But how you lead them with tenderness and care is so crucial, I think, to leading positive change, at least with that type of person who's holding on to preferences. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to revisit this as pastors. You can't let the church be about your preferences and
desires.
That's
right. Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I
say it all the time, man. There's stuff in our church. I wouldn't do it that way.
No,
but it's not my church.
No, and it's really hard for me. One of the reasons I loved being a serial church planter, and that wasn't a mistake. It was intentional. Back then, the denomination asked me to be what they called a church starter strategist. I would go into a community, and I would start one church. And while I was starting that one, I would do cultivation for another church, and I would do strategy for a third church. And as soon as I got the one sort of up and going, we would bring in a founding pastor, and I'd turn that over to him, and I'd go to the next one and the next one. That's how I accomplished being part of a dozen church plants. You know, I didn't stay very long, a couple of years, 3 years. But a lot of times early on, I'm the only one there, me and my family.
Yeah,
sort of.
Yeah.
So I can do whatever I want, right? I can play the music I want, and I can design the logo I want. And I had to be really careful when I became a pastor of an established church to say, this isn't about me. That shouldn't have been about me either. But as pastors, we can read something. Oh, this is cool. I would like to do this. That doesn't matter whether you'd like to do it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about your preferences or your desires either, and you can model that for your people. Number three.
Yeah, let's we'll wrap this thing up with this third point, and that is, man, I have something to say about this, so let me get it off my chest.
All right.
And that is, I will pray for my church leaders. Mm. Listen, your folks are not going to pray for you unless they know that you're praying for them.
Wow, that's
true. It really starts there.
That's good.
And they will pray for you if they know you're praying for them. I mean, by name, and you let them know you are. But one of the important reasons of praying for your church leaders is you're acknowledging they need prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're acknowledging they're not perfect.
Yes, that's right.
That they can't do it on their own. That they have to rely on God. You're also praying for God to protect them. You're praying about spiritual warfare. You're praying for wisdom. And when you do that, you understand their role a lot better. Praying for them helps you understand their role. It also gives you a role in their life and a role in their ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actively praying for my pastor. I'm on his team.
That's right.
I'm working together with him.
Wow.
We're in this together. I'm not just watching him do something. And I want to see God accomplish something through his life. And the fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. I will have a part in that.
That's right.
Through my prayer life.
That's right.
But,
and
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and to invite your people into that is an honor.
Absolutely.
Right? To let them know, would you be willing to pray for me? I'm trying to put together a team of folks who would I know I need the Lord, and could I send you once a week just a few items to pray for? Do you know the joy? They feel like I'm on his team. But you've got to be intentional about that.
I got to tell you this story. Dan knew my dad all of his life, and my dad was not like me at all. My dad didn't have a sarcastic, harsh bone in his body.
He didn't, did he? Nope.
There's never been a man more gentle than my father.
True.
How he would look at me sometimes and just shake his head.
How he and my father were friends, I don't know.
I don't know either. They were roommates in college, and they were very, very different. My dad told me one day, he goes, you know, Harold can be hard to get along with. He said, he has a real problem with how I hanged my clothes up when I was in college. And I had to put everything. Anyway, whatever. Nonetheless, nobody cares about that. But anyway, my dad was a gentle and loving, kind person. But when he retired from pulpit ministry, 67, 68, he lived to be almost 90. He just said, you know what, I'm just going to find the closest Southern Baptist church to my house. I'm going to join it, and I'm just going to be a sweet church member. He didn't say sweet, but I knew he said a faithful church member.
Mm.
You know what he did? He joined Sycamore Hills Baptist Church. You could almost walk to it from his house. And he became a loyal church member in that church. And he loved people and prayed for people. He prayed for his pastor. And at his funeral, his pastor, Willie, got up and cried at his funeral and said, Harry Clifton was maybe the best church member I've ever had. He said, you know, and my dad was very influential in this city.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly influential.
Yep.
I mean, whoa. He did not wait. He could have gone in. Incredibly influential.
Really? Wow.
And
not intentionally.
No, never intentionally.
Yeah.
And so Willie said, you know, Willie tried to take that church through a whole lot of changes, a whole lot of things. It was a very difficult place sometimes. And Willie said at his funeral, he said, you don't know how many times people would go to your dad at his house and say, you know what's happening in our church? What do you think about that? Or do you know what Pastor Willie's trying to do? What do you think about that? And Willie said, everybody I talked to told me your dad gave the very same answer. Your dad would look him in the eye or hold their hand and say, I think that means Jesus wants you to pray for your pastor. That's what I think it means. And I think Jesus wants you to love your pastor and help make him the best he can be and pray for your pastor and support your pastor. And Willie just began to weep, and he said, I can't tell you what that did for my ministry here. I mean, just praying for a pastor and loving him. So when you want to criticize him, that's your cue to pray for him.
Mm-hmm.
When you want to cut him down, that's your cue to try to pray for him that God would. It's not your cue to find a way to get rid of him or to torpedo him. It's a cue to pray for him. And, man, just go be the best, sweetest church member you can. You know what? My dad was happy.
Yeah.
In the last years of his life, he was delighted. He didn't have to have a platform. He didn't have to be important. He didn't have to. There's some, I'm talking to some of you, former retired pastors, who go to a church and join it, and people come to you, and all of a sudden, now you feel important again. Oh, they want my opinion. Well, I'll give you my opinion.
Yeah,
don't give them your opinion. You're not the pastor. Tell them to pray for their pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't support that pastor, you go join another church.
That's good, man.
All right, we'll just end with that. How about that positive note?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to continue this in our next episode, and when we have our episode, and we do have episodes.
I just had an episode right there.
We'll continue talking about I Am a Church Member, and I hope you'll join us then. Please subscribe, and also just jot it. You know what would be nice?
What?
There's a place where you can leave notes and messages to us, depending on which how you're listening to us. Leave a note for the North American Mission Board. They sponsor this. They make this happen, and we're so grateful for them to give us the time to do this and make it happen. So thank you, guys, and thank you personally for listening.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.